Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to Listen, Money Matters. Things may come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle. Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah.
Did he say that?
He did, actually. He did.
Wait, did he?
I wasn't there to hear it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You weren't here to say it. Nobody was there to write it down, but I'm pretty sure he was saying that. And right after that, he said, hashtag crush it.
Exactly.
Put on that stovepipe hat and went to work. All right. I'll believe it. Anyway, my name is Thomas, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend, Andrew. Andrew, how are you, and what are you drinking, Mr. Apocryphal
Shit.
Quote Generator?
I totally forgot a beer. It's so hot out here right now. I don't even have a beer. I have water. So
I can
nothing.
See the beads of sweat on your forehead.
What are you drinking, dude?
Hint water. I don't know if you tried this. It's like kind of like LaCroix, but without the fizziness. It's just like very subtly flavored water. And I've been waiting for my particular Whole Foods to get it. They finally did. They didn't get my flavor that I wanted. They at least have the watermelon, which is pretty good.
I feel like Hint Water is like a hack from College Info Geek. Like, drink this during your test.
You gonna get a hint? yeah, I can invent
such
that.
Such cheesy jokes.
I can invent that. There's like the gum in Jimmy Neutron that you just like chew it and it's a book and then you know the book. Dude, when I saw that as a kid, I immediately wanted that. I was like, I want that to be a thing. Or I want to just be able to like touch books and know everything in them. But no, it's just like water that has a very, very subtle hint of fruit in it. Mm. I like it a lot. It's pretty good. Anyway, guys, today we have a guest on the show, which doesn't happen all that often, but we wanted to do an episode on ride sharing, on Uber, Lyft, and all the other zillions of companies out there that are, I guess, like ride sharing is one part of it, because there's also delivery stuff and apparently a new startup where you go pick up scooters from the side of the road. I don't know anything about that, and I'm also not all that knowledgeable about Uber or Lyft. I am imagining that you, Andrew, are also not that knowledgeable. So
really.
Today on the show, we've got Harry, aka the rideshare guy. And if any of you out there have ever driven for Uber or Lyft, I imagine you've probably been on his website once or twice. In fact, I have never driven for Uber or Lyft, but I found myself on your website. So you've done a pretty good job getting the word out. Welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to talk yet, but now I'm ready.
Yes, you can talk now. Are you drinking anything?
You know what? I actually just got back from a weekend in Vegas, so the only thing I've been drinking is water the past couple days.
Fair enough.
So, Harry, before you were like the quote-unquote rideshare guy, you just drove for Lyft and Uber?
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually, you know, so I went to college for aerospace engineering. So I was a structural engineer for about 6 or 7 years, worked for a couple companies, most recently Boeing. And about 5 years ago from today, so I guess back in 2013, 2014, you know, people were starting to hear about Uber and Lyft. Some people, you know, if you had like a cool or a hip friend, they were taking Uber and Lyft and they were telling you about it. I wasn't that cool friend, but, you know, I had one or two cool friends that hung out with me once in a while. And when I heard about Uber and Lyft, I thought, oh, this seems pretty interesting, and, you know, took a few rides and eventually signed up to drive while I was still working full time. But, you know, that was kind of one of the nice things and still is a nice thing about driving for Uber and Lyft is you can do it on the side and you can do it as much or as little as you want. So that's kind of how I got into it, as a passenger first, but then started driving for them really on the side on nights and weekends while I was still working full time.
Wow. Cool. So you were going to work 5 days and then you're what, doing full 2 weekend days like ride sharing?
I mean, you know, that's the nice thing, though, is honestly, there's no set schedule. So I definitely, you know, my wife was in med school at the time, so I had a lot of free time. Let's just put it that way. And I was sort of getting at a point in my life where I was kind of ramping down. You know, I think I was, you know, getting 25, 26, 27. And I wasn't as into going out every Friday, Saturday night and, you know, doing all that whole jazz anymore. You know, I was kind of more laid back, relaxing, working hard, you know, pursuing passions and reading even. Maybe I think I even started reading a lot of books in my mid-20s. So, you know, doing kind of what I'm going to say, lame stuff, but interesting to me, stuff like that. And so driving for Uber and Lyft just fit well into that. And, you know, I started off by doing Friday, Saturday nights and, you know, really because that seemed like it was the most lucrative times to drive. And then I also started doing some holidays, some big events, you know, St. Patrick's Day. Basically, you know, what I tell drivers in my book is follow the alcohol, because whenever people are drinking, that's where there are a lot of rides.
Gotcha. So on the note of following the alcohol, every time I have like played with the idea of driving for Uber, and it's never been very serious for me, but I'm, you know, I think like, what would it be like, you know, fun to drive around the city and all that kind of stuff.
Meet really, I always cool figured people. That
I would never want to do it on Friday nights because I'm so paranoid about someone like throwing up in the back of my car.
That was the first thing I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Did that ever happen to you?
Yeah, it's happened to me once. But, you know, to be honest, well, I guess so there's positives and negatives. Obviously, the negative is that someone throws up in your car and nobody really wants it. I mean, you do get a cleaning fee and, you know, most mm-hmm. of the time, well, I wouldn't say most of the time, but sometimes it's not always, you know, sometimes it's like dribbles and sometimes it's here and there. You know, we've seen some bad ones. We've seen some good ones. But that was sort of what I started to realize is, you know,
you said a cleaning fee. Uber will give you a fee if someone pukes in your car?
So they actually charge. So, you know, obviously the nice thing for Uber for passengers is that your credit card is on file.
Yeah.
But if you puke in your Uber, they'll charge you up to $150 cleaning fee, which you know, I think is,
okay,
it's reasonable,
that's good.
Right? Because if someone pukes in your car, you have to go and get it cleaned and detailed and all that. And, you know, it may even be more than $150, but, you know, that's what they do.
Well, I wanted to ask, like, is it profitable for someone to puke in your car?
So you know what's funny? One of our contributors, he wrote this article and it was called basically Why I Embraced the Puke on our blog. And basically he kind of discovered that, you know what, if I just, you know, keep cleaning supplies in my back and, you know, I sort of target the area. So he's in San Diego. So if anyone's familiar with that, he targets like Pacific Beach and downtown and Encinitas, basically all the places where people are getting really trashed. And he kind of, I would say, doesn't, you know, hope for them. But when he gets a puker, he takes a bunch of pictures, sends it to Uber, cleans it up, you know, goes to like the quick little gas station, and then he switches over to Lyft for the rest of the night and drives for Lyft. So he racked up over $1,300 in cleaning fees last year. And for him, he sort of looks at it as like pure profit. But yeah, so you can if you're really a hustler. So,
the puke hack.
You see them getting a little on the edge and you start driving erratically just to help them out.
Yeah, I mean, so this is sort of the opposite of what I say in my book. But if you're looking for pukers, we can kind of use the reverse strategies. We can say that, you know, typically if someone, you drop the pin right when you're requesting a ride. So it's based off your GPS location for customers. Mm-hmm. And that's how the driver knows where you are. And typically, if a passenger, you know, especially late at night, if they drop their pin somewhere and then you get there and they're not there and they're like 5 blocks away or 2 blocks away, that's a good sign that they're probably pretty wasted and can't figure out how to use the app. And usually you just cancel on them at that point so they don't puke in your car. But I guess if you're going for pukers, you would go find them and then take them home.
So regarding the canceling thing, is there any like consequence to canceling on a rider?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, what's funny is that you think about like driving, whenever I tell people that I run a blog and a podcast and have a book about driving for Lyft and Uber, people always say, how hard could it be? Right. I mean, you just pick people up and drop them off at their location. And that part is, you know, literally driving down the middle of the street at 40 miles an hour. That's the easy part. But the pickups, the drop offs, you know, knowing the policies and the cancellations, that's where it gets honestly very confusing. And Uber and Lyft sometimes have different policies. So, with cancellations, for example, right, when I show up to pick up Andrew at his house and let's say he's not ready, after 2 minutes, they'll actually start charging Andrew a per minute waiting fee, which is low. It's only about 10-15 cents a minute, but it kind of encourages the passenger, hey, your driver's waiting, come outside so he doesn't get pissed, right? And then after 5 minutes total, so 2 minutes unpaid and 3 minutes paid waiting time, you can cancel on that passenger as a no-show and you get $5 fee basically, and they charge the passenger $5. So that's sort of how the cancellation fee works for the most part at the most basic level.
So if there aren't people puking in your car, can you actually earn a living though? I mean, $5 on cancellation sounds sweet, but you know, that's not a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you're actually doing rides, right? Cancellations are not, kind of what you're going for. But I would say, earning a living, I think that everyone is different, and that's kind of the unique thing about driving for Uber and Lyft. There's a lot of variability, right? If you go out and hire, let's say 10 people to be a barista at Starbucks, they're all going to get paid the same amount, I think, on day one. I've never worked at Starbucks, but that's sort of what I'm assuming, or, you know, that sort of typical entry-level job. With Uber, there's variability, and that's kind of what I've based my whole business around, is that the better the driver you are, the more experience you have, the more knowledgeable you are, the more money you can make. And you're not going to go out and make like three times as much as someone else, but you can definitely make 25, 50% more. And so the average driver actually reports earning around $16 to $18 per hour. And that's before expenses. So it's not, you know, it's not going to make you rich or anything like that. But you can imagine that if that's average, there's definitely some drivers who make more and there's some drivers who make less. And, you know, what I always tell people is that I think it's a great flexible part-time work. I personally wouldn't do it full-time. And, you know, if you have the option, I wouldn't do it full-time. You know, I wouldn't recommend doing it full-time either. But that being said, there are people where, you know, they have no job and they have no way to make money. And so that's their only option. And for them, it's a great option. If, you know, the option is $0 or working full-time, it's better than nothing.
So you said before expenses, and I'm guessing like gas, wear and tear on the car, is that like...
Yeah, so and the easy way is basically expenses, you know, luckily this is where my engineering background comes in handy and we've done a bunch of calculations on the site and we could probably link to a couple of the articles that we've done in the show notes, but basically your expenses are going to be around $3 to $5 per hour. So since you have to provide your own car, you know, there's a reason why so many Uber drivers are, you know, rolling around in a Prius, right? It's because it gets great gas mileage. It's kind of a relatively... I wouldn't say inexpensive car, but modest four-door sedan. And so it's sort of like a nice fit for an Uber driver car. So if you got a great deal on a Prius and you were able to pay cash, you're probably closer to $3 per hour in expenses, maybe even a little bit lower. Whereas if you finance your car and maybe you didn't get, you don't have great credit and so you had to pay more, then your expenses might be a little higher. So it's kind of a combination, obviously, of gas, but, you know, depending on the miles per gallon of your car, depreciation, and then, you know, even taxes too, because Uber and Lyft drivers are 1099 contractors. So you do have to account for taxes, and that gets a little complicated, but you know, it is what it is.
So that $16 to $18 per hour number is also before tax number.
Yeah, it's before taxes, but you know, the caveat is that drivers put a lot of miles on their car, and you know, anyone who's a business owner, I bet we have a lot of business owners listening to this podcast, and you know that the mileage, you know, the standard mileage deduction that you can take is like a business owner's best friend, because most cars don't cost 57 or 56, whatever they always change it to, 57 cents per mile to drive, right? It should be a lot lower, and it typically is. So if you're a driver putting 1,000 miles a week on your car, which is pretty easily done as a full-time driver, you now get to offset, you know, let's say $500 plus of your income. So if you're making $1,000 a week driving full time for Uber and you can offset $500 just off of the mileage alone, and then you start getting, you know, I wouldn't say creative, but, you know, you really start to think about what are the other expenses that I could deduct? My cell phone, my internet, do I have a home office, you know, where I sit at home and plan out the times and days and strategies, you know, that I'm going to use in driving or what's doing research on services. You can start to see that it really adds up, you know, if you're really out there thinking about it smartly.
Yeah. So you mentioned that a really good driver can make 25 to 50% more than the average driver. Yeah. If someone's getting into this game now, what are some of the things they can do to kind of put themselves in that top tier as soon as possible?
For sure. So, well, the first thing, you know, I would say that isn't always under someone's control, but depending on the city that you live in, it can be potentially more profitable. So bigger cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, we saw that drivers in San Francisco made about, I think it was $7 or $8 more per hour on average. You know, so instead of that 16 to 18, I believe they were like $23, $24 per hour. And that's just by driving in San Francisco. And we also saw a pretty
strong cost of living is really going to eat into it.
Yeah, the cost of living does eat into it, but for the most part, most drivers can't afford to live in San Francisco. And so they're going to live, you know, up to an hour away from the city and, you know, drive in and drive out. So you're right, there are definitely some additional expenses there. But I mean, for the most part, I think targeting the most profitable times and places to drive is how you increase your earnings. So we talked a little bit earlier about following the alcohol, and that's always sort of been the go-to starter strategy, right? So Friday, Saturday nights, especially Friday, Saturday nights, you know, towards the end of the night when the bars are closing and people want to go home, there's less drivers, you know, there's less Uber drivers out on the road, and there's a lot of people that need to get home. And that's typically when you see surge pricing or prime time pricing on Lyft, which basically means that there's an imbalance, right? There's more people requesting than drivers on the road. And so Uber raises prices on customers, and in turn, drivers get paid more. And so that's really kind of like a driver's surge as a driver's best friend, because that helps you make more money for basically doing the same amount of work.
And how much of that surge do you get as a driver?
So the pay is, you know, so I guess the way that pay works has gotten pretty confusing, to be frank. But for the most part, Uber now charges the passenger a certain price. And so that price is fixed. So let's say it's normally $10 to get from your house to the bar. They're going to charge you $10. But depending on traffic and depending on the time of the day, it might go up, it might go down. If there's surge pricing, that let's say there's a 2x multiplier, it'll obviously be $20. Now, drivers get paid a per mile and per minute rate. And so usually it ends up that Uber takes around 30 to 40% of the fare. And so if they're charging, and this is kind of the simple way to explain it because we don't have an hour, but for the most part, you know, if Uber charges the passenger $10, drivers should receive around $6 to $7 basically for that ride.
So they're taking a lot of the fare. Is Lyft greedy?
Yeah, Lyft is just as greedy. And I mean, to be honest, that's, you know, one of the things in my book is, you know, it's not all just, you know, like with any job, right? There's positives and negatives to driving for Uber and Lyft. And that's really one of the things that I've always strived to do. I'm not necessarily going out and saying, hey, you should drive for Uber and Lyft, and this is the best job in the world. I'm saying that, hey, this is a great opportunity for a lot of people, but there's definitely positives and negatives. And I would say right now, that's one of the biggest complaints that we hear from drivers is that Uber and Lyft are taking more and more of the fare. And because of this new system that they switched to, which is called upfront pricing, where so it used to be what the rider paid, drivers would basically get a set percentage of that. Mm-hmm. Now there's kind of this ambivalence and gray area. And so there are rides where Uber takes even more. And, you know, I've seen screenshots as high as 80% that they're taking on specific rides, right?
Holy
now,
crap.
Of course, you know, Uber says on some rides they lose money, on some rides they make money, but there isn't a lot of transparency. So there's definitely some pain points for drivers, you know, when it comes to pay and kind of understanding your pay, really.
I would be shocked if they lost money on rides. I'm pretty sure they engineered that to not be a thing.
Well, you know, actually, so...
I mean, they lost money on rides for like the first 5 years of their existence, entirely, didn't they?
They lost $4 billion last year.
Okay, that's incentive. It was
all about market share.
Right?
Right. No, I mean,
well, that was all about market share to beat all the competitors. Mm.
Right. No, I mean, so we did a big analysis where we basically looked at, I think, over 100 different fares, because Uber provides all this information on a trip-by-trip basis to drivers. You can't add it all up and sum it all up. You kind of have to go in there and do it manually. But we basically looked at over 100 trips for a couple different drivers. And there were a few Uber Pool rides where Uber did actually lose a few dollars on them. And so Uber Pool is one that they've, you know, actually said that they're losing money on because they're trying to, you know, generate a bunch of demand basically.
Mm-hmm. So besides following the alcohol, what else can people do to make more money? And I know that Uber introduced tips, right?
Yeah, no, tipping, you know, Uber and Lyft both have tips. So that's another good way. You know, I think drivers typically see that they get better tips on Lyft than they do with Uber. Mm-hmm. But, you know, tipping is one way. And then, you know, I think driving for multiple services is a big one. You're an independent contractor, so you can actually drive for Uber. You can actually drive for Lyft. And that's what we talk a lot about on the site, is how to do just that. There's actually a third-party app that allows you to basically automatically drive for Uber and Lyft. So when it's slow or when it's not as busy, you can log on to Uber and Lyft, take whichever request comes first, log off the other app, and then, you know, keep doing that until you're done.
Hmm. So what's that app called?
That app is called Maestro. So it's Maestro. Okay. It's actually a very cool app. And the founder of Maestro was an Uber driver himself and kind of saw that there was this huge pain point and ended up starting it and getting funding and all of that. And so it's probably one of the more popular apps for drivers right now because it definitely solves that pain point and, of course, helps you make more money. So, you know, there's a lot of different strategies that you can use. I mean, I think really one of the more, you know, what I would say advanced, you know, that the more savvy drivers, I think in my book, it's chapter 5, but it's probably the longest chapter in the book, but basically all the different ways to make more money. Cause as you could imagine, people like money and they want to know how to make more.
That's
of
why
it.
They're listening.
So we talk. Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, exactly. Right. That's literally why they're listening. Right. And so, you know, we talk a lot about that, but I mean, I think the other thing that comes into play is just what we call being a little bit more of a cutthroat driver. And one of the things that I enjoy about driving for Uber and Lyft is it's kind of like really good practice for running your own business. And most drivers get into this looking to make $200-$300 a week, yet they start doing it and they realize, hey, like I said earlier, right, there's a little bit more to it. It's the ultimate combination of customer service, running your own business, and even, dealing with the occasional unruly passenger or drunk passenger, right? And so you kind of have to navigate, and safe driving, right? So you have to navigate all these different aspects. And on the business side, you know, I think that's one of the cool things is you have to think about your income, but also your expenses, right? How much does it cost to operate your car? It's great if you're making $20 an hour, but are you spending $10 an hour to get that? And so that's definitely one of the things that, you know, I've enjoyed as far as on the business side. And I think it's great practice because for these drivers now, you kind of have to make decisions. So for example, Uber uses this bonus program right now called Uber Quest. And it's a big, huge, it's a big bonus program in all the top cities, LA, San Francisco. And basically, in its simple form, it says, if you do 75 trips, we'll pay you, you know, a $200 bonus on top of your regular earnings. And so what you're trying to do is get as many short trips as you can, as quickly as possible, so that you get your bonus, right? And so let's say I, as a driver, I'm sitting in the middle of San Francisco and I get a request all the way across the bridge to Oakland, and it's going to take me an hour to get there and probably an hour and a half to get back in traffic. That's only one trip. And so it's really going to hurt my, bonus chances, right? And so at that point, that might be a point where, hey, I'm probably not going to do this all the time, but I might actually cancel on that passenger and say, hey, you know, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to cancel this ride. I can't, you know, I would probably make something up and say I have to pick my kid up or something and not just say I'm trying to make money. But, you know, those are the choices you have to make as a business owner. Like, not every customer and not every trip is going to be profitable. And I think that's where you really start to see that, you know, I'm not the type of person, I'm not going to do that to every rider, but once in a while, you may need to do something like that. That's not, you know, the nicest thing to do, but as a business owner, you sort of have to look out for yourself sometimes.
Yeah. So something I was curious about earlier, if you cancel on a rider and it's not after that late period, is there some sort of like, does your rating go down, or is there some sort of penalty that happens after you do it so many times?
So it's a really, I would call it a gray area, because there's no defined, rule that says, okay, if you cancel at this point, you're going to get penalized. But basically, if you do that too much, Uber will, I think what Uber does, and I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming what they do, and I think what they do is they compare the cancellation rate to the average. So if you're canceling, let's say 20, 30%, and the average for drivers in your city is 10%, they'll start sending you email warnings, and then eventually, potentially even deactivate you for doing that. But usually they give you multiple warnings beforehand.
So there have been a few times that I requested an Uber, maybe it was at like an airport or whatever, and it seems like they're just not moving. Like, they literally pulled over to the side of the road, and it's like they're waiting for me to cancel. This is like a real tactic, I'm guessing.
Definitely. I mean, that's probably, taking it. I wouldn't call that a tactic. I would just call that stealing. But, there are drivers, unfortunately, who take advantage of the rules or the system. And I mean, it sounds like what's happening there is, because if you, after 2 minutes, if you cancel the ride, that driver is going to get a $5 cancellation fee. And so, there's some drivers who do that, but as you can imagine, it's somewhat easy for Uber to spot this. And over the years, they've had a lot of problems with fraud, especially in places like China. So Uber has gotten pretty good at detecting fraud. And, there's always new scams and hacks that are popping up, but eventually they do a pretty good job of weeding them out and, getting rid of them. So, I think that there's sometimes where it's a little bit more of like a gray area. And there's also sometimes where it's basically just more stealing than anything.
Yeah. So I want to move into some comparisons between like Lyft and Uber and things like that. But I guess just to recap on this whole making more money section, kind of boils down to number one, following the alcohol, like you said.
Yeah.
Using the app that's going to be most profitable or most busy. So using an app like Maestro, which will let you use multiple services at once. Taking advantage of those bonuses, trying to lower your expenses as much as possible, like maybe getting a used Prius or something like that. And then I guess one thing that I've noticed, and I'm not sure if you've talked about this on your blog or not, is occasionally, and I think this usually happens in like New York City, I'll get into a car and they've got it like decked out with water bottles and like face wipes, and they're like, hey, you can put your phone and play the, you can play your own music. Yeah. Just like the service aspect of it. They just kind of make it a little bit more classy than your average, college kid picking you up in a Corolla or something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. The thing with that is there's not going to be a direct correlation between, you know, you providing much better service and then instantly making more money. But, you know, over time, you may get better tips, or over time, you may get passengers who want to request you again. And maybe they want you to be their private driver or whatever it might be, right? There's a lot of drivers that sort of go and do that type of stuff. So, you know, I think if you're kind of a little bit of a hustler and thinking outside the box, that type of stuff can definitely work. But for the most part, I wouldn't say it's like the traditional way to make more.
Okay. Yeah. I more saw it as just like a way to potentially boost tips.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how, actually, that's a good question. How do both of you guys handle tipping with Uber and Lyft? Because personally, since there were no tips in the beginning, I typically only tip if it was like, if they either made really good conversation or there was something beyond a simple car shows up, takes me to place and drops me off kind of thing.
So we usually try and tip. I think in New York, it's just very everything's very expensive, and kind of feel like it's maybe a little unfair. I know they're not making much, or I'm assuming they're not making much. And so I figure like $2-3, like we'll bullshit with them. Like I almost always ask them about like what they feel about Uber or Lyft or just, I don't know. Is that like what you would do, Harry, or do you think it's...
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little, I think I'm a little biased since I run a site for drivers, but I always tip, you know, when I'm riding and, you know, but the nice thing too is, especially now that Uber and Lyft both have the tipping option on the short fares, right? Because on the short fares, drivers really don't make a lot because Uber and Lyft take, you know, a higher commission on shorter fares, but so, you know, on a short fare, like even $1 or $2 tip on a short fare might be, you know, it might be like a 30-40% tip. So I think obviously, you know, I'm biased, but I think definitely tipping drivers is a good thing. And especially if you have someone that stands out, I think that in that kind of case, right, definitely reward them. I mean, that's sort of what tipping is there for in the first place.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'll just have to start tipping on every trip.
No pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I got started with Uber and I had never really used Lyft. Much so. It was kind of like a surprise when that popped up in the app.
You know, it's weird.
Though since then, I have started using Lyft
so
as well.
I usually use Uber because it's just like easy, whatever. But Laura's been using Lyft. And I think like almost across the board, we feel like we get better experiences with Lyft. Like people are just like, I don't know, nicer, cooler. And I guess maybe the question to you, Harry, is like, is it better? Like, are people happier driving for Lyft, or is it just like an arbitrary thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, you know, I think at the end of the day, Uber and Lyft are both providing the same exact thing, right? They're providing transportation. They're getting you from A to B with sort of a, you know, like a personal friendly type driver. And so at the core, the companies, I think, are very similar. But definitely what we see amongst drivers and even passengers, too, is, you know, we survey basically 1,100 drivers almost every year. And in our most recent survey, there's a clear, you know, basically favorability toward, you know, more drivers are actually satisfied with Lyft than they are with Uber. And I think for the most part, that lines up with, you know, my personal experience as a driver, as a passenger, and from talking to tens of thousands of drivers, most drivers basically prefer Lyft, but they tend to get more rides and make more money with Uber. So they're sort of busier with Uber, but they like Lyft better. And I think Lyft has always had a more driver-centric culture. You know, they were the first ones to have tipping and, you know, they encourage passengers to sit up front and be friendly and be nice and give them a fist bump and all that, which when you think about it is actually like kind of, you know, it's nice for the passenger, but it's also nice for the driver because these are guys like you and I who are not professional drivers and they don't always want to just sit there in silence and drive people around for 8 hours a day, right? Human interaction is sometimes good. And so I think that's why Lyft has always tended to, you know, be a little bit more favorable with drivers and even, you know, the passengers who are using it.
Would you say that most drivers who are taking this seriously are doing both, though, pretty actively?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. You know, most drivers are definitely doing both. Lyft tends to be not as busy in the smaller to mid-sized cities, but in the bigger cities like the LA, the San Francisco. I mean, there's some drivers who only do Lyft, for example, in LA, San Francisco. Whereas, you know, if you're out in the middle of the country, you definitely wouldn't be able to only do Lyft. You may only be able to do Uber, and Lyft may be there, but, you know, it may just not be as good of a experience or as reliable.
So one question I've had is, I know everyone says like you can set your own hours. How does that work? Is it literally, I feel like driving, you get in your car, you say, I'm good. And then it starts giving you rides. And whenever you're done, you say, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the cool things. You know, when we talk to drivers and ask them what they love about driving for Uber and Lyft, it's always the pay, because everyone wants to get paid, right? Mm-hmm. And then the flexibility. And I think that most people don't realize just how flexible driving for Uber and Lyft is. You know, regardless of how much money you're getting paid, it's probably one of the most flexible, if not the most flexible job in the world, because there's no schedule. You can turn on the app whenever and wherever you want and mm-hmm. drive for as long as you want or as short as you want for the most part. You know, they have a 12-hour limit, I think. So,
okay.
You know, you can basically drive up to 12 hours in a row, I think, in most states. And so that's a nice thing. You can take a month off, you can take 3 months off, you can take a year off if you want, and then come back. So there really is kind of that ultimate schedule flexibility. But I think for the most part, you know, people aren't going out and driving for one or two rides and then logging off. They're driving for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time, getting some momentum and getting some rides in, and then maybe taking a break.
So gotcha. as a rider, if I wanted, say, a cheaper ride, or as a driver, mm-hmm. I wanted to make more money. Is there like use Lyft or use Uber, or is it really like so samesies and indistinguishable? It's like irrelevant.
Well, I mean, I think actually, you know, so the base rates that Uber and Lyft both charge passengers are the same, literally the exact same in almost every single city. The company, you know, if Lyft raises, Uber will raise. They always are just basically matching each other. But the companies do offer lots of promotions to riders. You may have gotten, you know, an email that said, hey, your next five rides, you'll get $5 off, right? So I would always be on the lookout for those. And then what I've found to be pretty true is that for the most part, when it's busy, so when Uber is surging and when Lyft is on prime time, Lyft tends to be a lot cheaper. And so I think the reason for that is because Uber, you know, it's the dominant market share player. I think they say it has about 70% of the market across the US. And so most people, when they go to call, you know, a rideshare, they're opening Uber, right? So when it is busy, those prices go up a lot faster and a lot higher on Uber, whereas Lyft, you know, it may still be a little bit more expensive, but it's never nearly as bad. And, you know, I've heard that kind of time and time again, that Lyft tends to be cheaper than Uber.
Gotcha. So besides Lyft and Uber, and actually, you know what? I had one more question that I wanted to ask before we get into other services. What's the process like for getting started? Is it literally, you know, download the app, get in your car, and you're good? Or is there some training thing you got to go to?
It basically is. You know, I kind of joke sometimes that if you have a car and a pulse and you can pass a background check, you'll be approved for driving for Uber and Lyft. And, you know, that's one of the cool things, though, I think, is, you know, obviously the flexibility is big, but also we hear from a lot of drivers who are older, for example. So we hear from drivers who may have gotten laid off and they're 61, 62. They can't get hired because they're so close to retirement age at you know, back in the field that they want or whatever it might be. And so they go drive for Uber and they go drive for Lyft. And the nice thing is that these companies don't discriminate whatsoever based on age, sex, race, religion, you name it, right? They'll literally take anyone and everyone. And for a lot of people, you know, that's a pretty cool thing, a nice thing. I just talked to a gentleman yesterday who was disabled at his, I guess, his main line of work, and he couldn't go back to work. And so he drove for Uber and Lyft, and he's now driving for Uber and Lyft because all he has to do is sit in the car. So, you know, I think that there's definitely some benefits there down the road. That means that there's obviously more competition, right? Mm-hmm. All these drivers are looking for rides, but at the same time, I think it's great when you're just getting started. So to answer your question, you really only need to pass an online background check, have a smartphone, and have an eligible vehicle. So that's usually 2002 or newer in most cities.
And it's all done from home?
Yeah, I mean, it's all done. You can do it from home, or I think you can also actually go into their offices. They have these, they call them green light centers all over the US, and you can sign up in person. Some or most cities, I would say, do require a vehicle inspection. So this is like a really quick and simple, okay, do the brakes work? Do the lights work? Do the windshield wipers work and all that? So that may be the only step where you have to actually go in person and meet someone. But like in LA, for example, they have stations all over the city where you can do that.
Gotcha. Okay. So I can't just download it and then walk out of my apartment right after this interview and start driving, but probably within a day you can do it.
I would say probably more like 3 to 5 days is the typical, because, you know, they do have to run the background check and, you know, I think probably a couple other housekeeping type things.
So everyone talks about Lyft and Uber, and they're obviously the big dogs in the game. Mm-hmm. But if you have a car and are willing to do you know, similar things. Will you make more money with another service, like say Amazon's, whatever you call it, or the restaurant, the restaurant, who's him or what's it?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Amazon Flex. There's also Postmates and DoorDash. There's really no shortage of pretty big companies. But I think that for the most part, rideshare, so transporting people, tends to be the most profitable. Delivery might be a nice complement. It may be a nice sort of supplement. But at for the most part, you know, I would say that people, they're always going to pay more to get themselves across town than they are their burrito, probably.
True. You underestimate my devotion to burritos.
Right. You might pay that one night, right, when you're really hungry, or you know, whatever you've been doing that makes you really hungry and you need the burrito. But you know, for the most part, when you need to get around town all the time, I think it's a little more affordable to just pay for the Ubers.
So why would someone drive for Amazon Flex or DoorDash? I mean, do they hate people? And so they feel more comfortable around packages.
To be honest, if you know, sometimes
I would do it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes driving for Uber and Lyft can get a little old. I mean, Friday, Saturday nights, you know, you definitely have to be in the right mindset. People are going to be loud. They're going to be obnoxious. They're going to be partying and, you know, maybe not always super respectful of your stuff. And I think that for some people, you know, they're tired of dealing with people. They're more of an introvert and they just want to, you know, because if you're delivering food, for example, there's very little customer interaction, right? You just knock on their door, hand them the bag, and then you're done. So it's pretty simple relative to sitting in a car with someone for 20 or 30 minutes. And so I think for the most part, people do delivery because, you know, they're just looking for something different. Maybe they just aren't interested. You know, the other thing too is like these companies are spending so much on marketing and, you know, trying to acquire drivers. Maybe someone just saw an ad for Amazon Flex and didn't even think about driving for Uber and Lyft. And they're just saying, oh, I'll just go deliver packages for them. And then the other big thing too is the vehicle requirements are a lot looser with delivery. So you can have a van, you can have a truck, I've seen people deliver with their boyfriends, with their girlfriends, with their kids. There's a lot more flexibility as to, you know, kind of what you use and who you do it with.
One thing I was going to say about the delivery thing, a little hidden benefit, I guess, is that you could, while you're driving, listen to audiobooks, listen to podcasts. So if you wanted to, you know, work on improving your knowledge in some area, it's probably not something you can do with Uber and Lyft. Because, I mean, I guess you could, but I think most passengers aren't going to want to get into the car and listen to the autobiography of, I don't know, Warren G. Harding or whoever you're listening to.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't be able to listen to, I mean, I guess you really could if you wanted to, but I think for the most part, when it comes to rideshare though, I think there's sort of the other aspects, kind of the, what we call the fringe benefits of driving. I mean, working on your conversation skills. I had a few weeks ago, I had a lawyer in my car and he was super nice and super friendly and we were on a 30-minute ride and I basically just asked him with questions the whole time about law-related stuff to my business. And got like 30 minutes of free lawyer. And I was surprised he didn't send me an invoice when we were done. But so, you know, there are definitely some cool benefits and some cool sort of, you know, side stories that I think a lot of people, you know, that might not keep you driving for Uber forever, but it's definitely a cool experience for at least a short amount, short to medium amount of time.
As a natural introvert, which I don't know if you believe that, Andrew, but I think I would probably want to go with like DoorDash just so I could be in my car on my own.
I feel more comfortable with packages.
There you go.
I would be the Amazon Flex getting paid like nothing, but I don't have to talk to people. So I'll be happy.
So is that what Flex is? Like you deliver packages? Is that how you can do like same day delivery, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so Amazon Flex is typically the same day delivery type packages. So you go to a big warehouse and they give you a bunch of boxes and you put them in the back of your car and then you go deliver them. And they actually are pretty popular. They pay, I think, $18 to $21 an hour.
Whoa, that seems like a lot more than Uber and Lyft.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, so that's why I said that's why they're pretty popular. But the big thing with them is you have to work in 4-hour blocks usually. And so you kind of have to pre-schedule your blocks. And so there's a lot of competition amongst delivery drivers for those blocks. So that's like the one big complaint we hear about Flex is that there's never enough blocks, probably because they pay too much.
Gotcha. That would be for $18-$21 an hour and the packages are not going to puke my car. That'd be the one I'd pick.
So
sounds even better than pizza.
So, I mean, at like $21 an hour, what's minimum wage? It's like $8 or something, right?
7.75.
I mean, I think it depends. You know, I think it depends on the state. Some states, like our cities, are up to $15 an hour. So
that's still meaningfully higher. I mean, I'm surprised people are not all doing this.
I mean, it's before expenses. You have to remember that, right? Yeah. And with food and packages, you're not going to put as many miles on your car, but there's definitely some benefits. And, you know, I wouldn't, you know, the thing is that most people don't realize Uber now has, I think, 1.5 million drivers in the US, and all of these other services are, you know, Lyft has 700,000 and these other services are smaller. But I mean, there's still, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people doing these smaller services and millions doing the rideshare. So sometimes it, you know, it is, there are a lot of people. You know, you ask, you know, why aren't so many people doing it, or why aren't more people? But I almost feel like, you know, there are a lot more and more people doing it every day.
Yeah. So before we got onto this call, and one of you guys was telling me about some new one where you pick up scooters on the side of the road.
Yeah.
How does that one work? What does that even mean?
So there's a company here in that's actually based out of Los Angeles called Bird.
Okay.
And it's called Bird Scooter. And they're actually expanding everywhere. So I know that they're now in like 10 or 15 cities, and they just expanded to DC and Austin.
I heard about them on
Vice, all over the place.
And people are calling them like a scourge because there's just like the streets are littered with Bird scooters.
Yeah. And so basically you kind of have to imagine those old Razor scooters. So when I was a kid, you know, we would all roll around on Razor scooters. They kind of look like that, but they're electric and they go up to 15 miles an hour and they're free floating. So you can pick them up and drop them off anywhere. Basically.
Oh, so and it's kind of like city bike, except for instead of a station, it's just like the last person that used it just drops it wherever they want. And then there's an app and you just go grab it.
Yep, exactly. So that's exactly how it works. And they're becoming super popular. And, you know, these companies have all raised a ton of money. And so there's now, you know, in maybe in LA, for example, there in on the west side of LA, there might be like 1,000 to 2,000 scooters out during the day. And so there's just people everywhere riding them, and people love them and all that. Some people hate them because, you know, they just don't like new things. Or you know, there are some legit safety concerns, like people are riding them on the sidewalk. So it's not all good, like with anything, right? There's some problems, but for the most part, they're pretty interesting, pretty cool, and they hire people like me, or you know, really on-demand workers, to go out and basically capture all of the birds every night, take them home, charge them at home, and then go release them in the mornings so that people can use them again and have fresh.
So when you release them,
I'm installing it.
Do
right
you
now.
Like drop them right outside your front door, and you're like, peace.
No, so you have to, they're really big on puns. So they tell you to release it in a nest. And so you have to release them in groups of three. And typically the nests are going to be in kind of high traffic places, you know, basically where people might actually use them. So you can't just leave it in front of your house.
And so what do you get?
I have the app now. I'm going to try this today. If it's in Denver, it might not be. I don't know if it is.
I don't know if it's in Denver yet, but to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if it was there by the end of the year. They're really, it's crazy. Like every week they're in a new city.
Okay. Well, it seems like a business model that wouldn't be too hard to expand. Just manufacture
and there's actually
a lot
three
of scooters.
Companies, right. There's three companies now doing it. Lime is another company, and then Spin. And so these companies are all expanding. So if you haven't heard of them yet, I'm sure you'll be seeing them on the street soon, and you'll probably either love them or hate them.
How much
them.
Money can you make doing this? Like I'm just charging them in your house and then dropping them at...
Yeah, so they pay $5 to $20 per scooter. And basically, depending on how hard the scooters are to find. So if it's just like sitting there on the sidewalk, you probably are going to get $5 for it. Or if it's been out there a long time, and so maybe that means they don't have a lot of chargers working out that night, they slowly raise the prices. So basically think about it like the more work you have to do or the harder they are to find, the more money you get for the most part. But, you know, so it's about, let's say it's $5 to $10 a scooter. And, you know, you can pretty easily, that's the thing. There's so much variability with a lot of these jobs and a lot of these gigs is that, you know, when Bird first started, it was easy for me. Like the scooters were everywhere and I would just go grab three and it would take literally 15 minutes, or I could grab six in 20 minutes. And that right there might be 30, 50 bucks on my way home, and a really easy way to make 50 bucks. And I don't even know how much time it would take, 20 minutes and then 15 minutes to drop them off. So less than an hour. But, you know, there's also been times where you might go out and if it's a really busy night and there are a lot of other chargers out there, which is what they call them, it might be harder to find them, and it might take you an hour to get three or five.
So
scooters.
You just grab whatever ones are like in your path and you just take them and charge them, or are they trying to like point you to specific?
Yeah, so you basically have an app. Yeah, you have an app that has all of the scooters on the app, and then you can pick the ones you want, but you know, they kind of designate them.
So there might be one there, but they're like, don't take this one because it doesn't need a charge and whatever.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, you and another charger show up at the exact same time, and then you guys have to fight and fight to the death.
It says that you have to wear a helmet. I highly doubt that people are actually wearing helmets on these things.
Yeah, nobody wears a helmet. I mean, I wear a helmet personally, but I'm kind of a nerd.
Well, you have to. You have to be the model.
Right. Well, no, I also, like, my wife works at a hospital, and so she's always telling me about like bicyclists that come into the hospital, and they're really messed up. And so when I hear those stories, I'm always thinking, okay, whenever I'm on a fast moving vehicle where cars are on the street, I want to make
sure. Oh my God. One of my old bosses, came in. Well, he like missed a few days work, came in, and he was like all gnarled up. And he said he was riding his bicycle and he fell, and we just couldn't stop making fun of him. Cause he was so, but I guess, yeah, you could really hurt yourself.
If you ever think helmets aren't cool, just put "I love helmets" into YouTube. There's just this video of this dude. He's doing like downhill longboarding or something, but he falls off backwards and just slams his head on the concrete. But he has a helmet on, so he just immediately stands up and just says, "I love helmets." And he's fine. So yeah, wear your helmet, kids. I don't think there's any birds in Denver. I'm very sad about that because I want to go outside and ride a motor scooter right now, but I don't want to buy one. So I don't know. I guess I'll just be patient. I'm sure it'll be in Denver in like, I don't know, 3 weeks or something.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It says it's in Austin, San Diego, Nashville, Santa Monica, San Francisco, San Jose, and Washington, D.C. So not even New York City. Interesting. Interesting that they did not take, or L.A. actually. So it's like, I guess, smaller pilot
cities? It's in L.A. Santa Monica is part of L.A. So they're they're slowly expanding west and or east and east every day, I think, in L.A.
That makes sense. Okay. I wonder if there's considerations on like cities that are too busy. I mean, maybe not.
Oh, yeah. No, they're definitely, you know, some cities are trying to figure out. Some cities obviously like them and some cities don't like them. So because there's scooters everywhere on the streets. So I think they're going to have to navigate a lot of that. But I think for the most part, a lot of consumers are pretty high on them and, you know, kind of similar to like when Uber first launched, people were really enjoying and loving them.
Yeah. I know for my part that when I learned about the new Boosted boards that are coming out, especially the small one, I'm like, I'm so tempted to buy one now.
So, Harry, you were working at Boeing, and then you were doing ride sharing on the side, hustling drunk people, and then figured like I have like too much time on my hands. I should probably also start a website.
I mean, honestly, I think that I've always sort of been good with time management. And to be frank, you know, one of the nice things when you're working a day job is that as long as you sort of get your work done, people don't really care usually what you're up to.
I found the exact limits of that. And I would just meet the requirements and then,
Right. I mean, I guess that's kind of the subtle way of saying I did some side hustling work at work. It's kind of the subtle way of saying that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think for me, it was kind of like, all right, I started driving for Uber and Lyft, and there were a bunch of Facebook groups at the time. So people were sharing their stories and, you know, trying to figure out this new Uber and Lyft thing. And this, remember, this was 5 years ago. So people literally had no idea what Uber and Lyft were. And, you know, it seemed like it was a good opportunity because Uber was already worth in the billions, I think. And they were this tiny company and a lot of people had questions, but there was really no one authoritative. And so it seemed to me, like, since I had some prior blogging experience and I had done freelance writing just for fun, it seemed like a interesting opportunity, but also a good business opportunity. So it kind of met something that I was interested in and something that could potentially make money. And so it kind of hit all of the things I was looking for and, you know, just any type of project.
So we had talked about like what makes more money, Lyft or Uber. And I think it was like kind of neutral.
Yeah.
What makes more money, ride sharing or blogging?
Well, definitely blogging, because, you know, that's my full-time job now. And, you know, I would say that for me, you know, so I started the blog and I did it for about a year and a half on the side while I was still working full-time at Boeing. And at a certain point, you know, I think I was getting around 50 to 70,000 page views a month. And I kind of was on an upward trajectory though. And I wasn't making as much as my day job, but I sort of knew that, all right, hey, right now I'm only spending 20 hours a week doing this on the side. Imagine if I was doing 40 or 50 hours a week on this. I think that, you know, I probably should be making a lot more, you know, and having a lot more traffic. And so I kind of just decided to go all in. I don't think it was a huge risk for me to quit my job and do it, because I wouldn't say I was relatively sure, but, you know, I was kind of already on the right path, the right trajectory. Yeah. And so for me, you know, that was kind of, you know, I got really lucky with the timing. I just happened to start my blog when Uber and Lyft were taking off and becoming huge. And, you know, I was really one of the first bloggers to write and, you know, really cover the industry. So
any, but you're also clearly putting a lot of effort into it with, you know, polling all these different drivers and tabulating all this data to figure out, you know, what actually pays better and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I think for me, it was kind of also about playing to my strengths, since I was an engineer. You know, when I started writing about driving for Uber and Lyft, I wanted to add a lot of context in terms of actual earnings. So, you know, I was doing spreadsheets of how much I was making. And for me, you know, doing a spreadsheet like that literally was my job for 7 years. So I can make really complex spreadsheets in almost no time and do cool stuff there. And so I really wanted to provide a lot of that extra insight and a lot of that extra data. And as the business has progressed, you know, I enjoy creating content, but I've also enjoyed running the business side of things. So I've hired a couple people on my team to help with content management and finding advertisers. And then, of course, you know, we now have a few contributors from all over the country. And the cool thing for me is everyone that I've hired has actually been from my audience. So it's sort of like, that's the nice thing about blogging, is that they're all actual Uber and Lyft drivers, which sometimes can be a challenge, you know, because like we talked about earlier, a lot of these drivers like driving for Uber and Lyft because they don't have a boss. Yeah. They can work whenever and wherever they want. So if I tell them, hey, I need this blog post back, it's like, all right, I don't have time for this.
Nope. No. Sorry, Harry, I'm going to go drive. That's really cool that people are coming from your audience. One of my best people on my team, like one of the people who's been with me the longest and is slowly working up to full time,
talking about
was
me,
an audience member. Yeah. Andrew's, he's on my team. He's slowly working up to full time from like 0 hours to, you know, full time eventually. No, I'm talking about the guy who does my editing and some of the writing as well. Like he just started as a person in the comments and then guest blogging and then freelance and now a retainer and probably a full-time employee at some point. So
very cool.
It's really cool when you get people from your audience because they, you know, they're kind of bought in.
Yeah, and
already.
I think that's the other thing, you know, with working online, I think you really have to be passionate because, I mean, for me, in my first year of basically running the site, I didn't make much, if any, money. Yeah. And luckily, you know, I had a full-time job, but I was doing 3, sometimes 4 articles a week. And imagine doing that for a year and not making much money, or if that was your full-time source of income. And so I think there is that really, that big cliff. And so if you're, but it was also, it was a topic that, you know, I didn't think I was going to be an Uber and Lyft driver for the rest of my life, but it was always in the news and it seemed really cool and people were always asking me about it and people are always talking about it. And so it was just something interesting and something that at the time, you know, I was passionate about. I still am very passionate about the industry in general and, you know, doing what I can to, you know, help drivers and really come from the perspective of, you know, the actual experience of a driver and really provide content. I think that's what, you know, I enjoy most about the business now is it's surprising that people are so thankful for content. And I'm sure you guys have probably heard from your own listeners that, you know, people just really enjoy hearing good interviews or hearing, you know, or reading good information that's going to help them do their job better. So I always obviously, you know, I like that people are finding value and that definitely keeps me going.
Yeah. So I know during the interview, we mentioned a couple of different resources on your site, which we will have in the show notes. But if people are curious about, you know, driving for Uber, driving for Lyft, getting involved with these services or increasing their income, what is the best place for them to go? What's your site and maybe social media if they want to get in contact with you as well?
Sure. Yeah. So the rideshareguy.com is my blog, and we've got a new book out called The Rideshare Guide, not to be confused with The Rideshare Guy, but it's basically everything you need to know about driving for Uber, Lyft, and other ride sharing companies. And, you know, the book that I wrote is basically kind of a full kind of A to Z of almost everything we talked about. I was kind of surprised when it was done. I was like, man, that was very comprehensive. And you know, not to toot my own horn or anything like that, but I was like very, you know, it was a very good feeling. I'd never done a project like that where when I was done and kind of when all was said and done with the book, I was like, wow, I feel like I put a lot of effort into this and I'm really happy with the final product. And so far the feedback from my readers has been very positive, and it really is cool because it's kind of like if you're a brand new driver, you can start at the beginning and go from everything you need to know from like your first ride and even picking, oh, should I sign up with Lyft or Uber first, to, you know, all the way to the end, like really maximizing your earnings and a lot of those more in-depth strategies that we talked about, and how to do your taxes and how to make sure, you know, you don't get screwed over by anything like that. Or if you're, you know, a more advanced driver and you don't need the beginner stuff, you can just go to the juicy chapters and get that information right from the get-go.
Cool. Well, we will have links to all that in our show notes. And if you are listening to this on a podcast app, you can probably tap our faces or swipe. Otherwise, it's Listen Money Matters at listenmoneymatters.com/show. And I guess while I'm saying it or missaying it, you can also email us your questions, whether they be about Lyft and Uber and ride sharing or anything about your finances, to listenmoneymatters@gmail.com. Harry, thank you so much for being on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's great talking. Last but not least, listenmoneymatters.com/toolbox is where you can find all of our favorite money management resources, budgeting tools, investment apps, all sorts of stuff that we've talked about on the show, as well as our book recommendations. So check that out. And unless you have anything else to add, Andrew, I will wrap it up. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in next week's episode.
Later, man.
Later, guys.
Please tell your friends about this show.